We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 170. We're recording this early in game two of the doubleheader. It did not go as planned. Game one did not go as planned. Scott, we were talking after Sunday's game, all fired up because the Yankees got within 2.5 games of the Red Sox. Boy, have things changed pretty quickly this week.
Yeah, things are different. When you run into a hot Cleveland Indians team, I mean, this is a good team, and they're playing good baseball right now, too. So add those two together, that's a recipe for ending that nice little streak. And that's exactly what's happened, unfortunately. So we're recording this in the middle of the second game of the doubleheader. Hopefully they can come back. Montgomery did not help them out by giving up four early. So hopefully we get something good.
Coming up later in this episode, I talked to Rich Keefe of WEEI in Boston about the upcoming Red Sox series. Just keep in mind, I recorded that on Tuesday night before the Yankees dropped the first game of the doubleheader and hopefully did not drop the second game. But we kind of talked about the rivalry from a Red Sox perspective, asked if he hated any of the players. Little spoiler alert, he's not a huge fan of Gary Sanchez, which is to be understood. And we also talked about some of the other Red Sox players and some of their injury updates. So stay tuned for that part of the podcast later in this episode. Also, reminder about September 30th, Scott.
Yeah, we're just waiting on the New York Yankees to give us a link at this point. We're just waiting on them to release that link so that we can get it out to sale for you guys. But it's happening, from what I'm told, any second now. We're all good on our end. The seats are all reserved. We're just waiting for that point of purchase link. So keep an eye out. Make sure you still block your calendars. $59 gets you a ticket to the game in sections 204 and 205, 205 and 206, sorry, and then gets you a t-shirt and gets you a pregame at the Bronx Brewery. That's two Bronx Banner Ale beers, 16-ounce pints for free, and then we got $4 Banner pints running from then until about 3 o'clock when the game starts. If they flex the game till later, then we'll just adjust the time accordingly, but that's it. It's a tremendous deal. September 30th, mark it on your calendar. As soon as the point of purchase is up, you will know. I guarantee it because I will blast it everywhere.
Yeah, we've got a lot of people on social media saying, when are those tickets going on sale? So that's a good thing because people are looking out for it.
Yeah, they're coming, I promise you.
Before the game on Monday, Girardi talked about sitting down Aaron Judge for a few games, and I think it was a long time coming. You and I talked about giving him a little bit of a mental day's rest as well as a physical day's rest like 2 weeks ago on the podcast. Finally, it took 2 months of Judge striking out every day for Girardi to finally do it. I think the thing that set him over the edge was there is a little bit something to that left shoulder injury.
Yeah, but the problem with what I'm having with this injury is that they're talking about, one, we see the wrap. We talked about that last time. But they're not doing anything about it besides maybe a little bit of rest. I mean, I just don't understand why, if you have a guy of this magnitude with a potential injury, why we're not looking into it, why they're not talking about CSI Bronx on Aaron Judge like they were gonna, like they had done with Tanaka. I just, to me, why not play the cautious route and check it out just in case? I don't get that.
Right. You should have got all up in his chambers.
You should have gotten all up in his chambers. That's it.
They should have gotten under all up in his chambers with an MRI.
Look under the robe. Aaron Judge. Under the robe.
Brian Hoke tweeted that not only did he not have a cortisone shot, but he didn't even have an MRI. I just don't understand that. What possibly could an MRI, how could that be negative other than the fact that it shows actual damage? At the very least, just for peace of mind for Aaron Judge and the Yankees, it could show nothing, which would be good.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the cortisone shot if you're not going to look at what is causing the injury and then you're just going to do a blind cortisone shot. That doesn't happen. But the fact that they're not doing the MRI or any kind of, I don't know, maybe the physician just feels okay with what he's looking at physically and saying, look, this is not what I think it is. I'm sure doctors can tell something without going to an MRI, but I don't know. To me, when you have a guy like this that's as big as he is, who is the future of your team, you've already put a freaking section in right field. Let's just find out in case something actually is happening that maybe the doctors are having a bad day and didn't see. A la Greg Bird, by the way.
Right. It took them, 2 months to finally diagnose what was wrong with Greg Bird.
Yeah. So why can't we use that as a nice little example of things aren't always what they seem and just get the freaking pictures taken and take a look at it. Doesn't hurt.
What's your opinion on players like Judge who say every time when Girardi asks him, no, I'm fine. Girardi said equated him to Derek Jeter in that sense. Like Jeter would never admit he was banged up. He would always just say, I'm fine. I can go out there and play. How do you feel about players that do that?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's not their decision, honestly. I think if something is truly bothering them to a point where, you know, it's a major hindrance. I think a lot of these guys do believe that they're right on the cusp of either breaking out of something or it's really not hindering them as much. It's something else. So I think you have to take the word of the player with a grain of salt, and you have to rely on your medical staff for that type of thing, because the player, of course, you want them to play. Of course you want that attitude.
Clint Frazier had the same attitude, which is why he didn't really tell anybody for a little while that his oblique was hurting. And then he finally told somebody, I'm assuming he told the trainer, like, hey, can you take a look at my rib cage area? I'm feeling a little sore. And then that's sort of what landed him on the DL. But Frazier was the same way. And we haven't really heard an update on Clint Frazier's status, I think, because they're just milking this thing until we can get some September call-ups.
And then there's no doubt about it. They're waiting, because if he were to come back right now, there could possibly be a messy roster situation with Aaron Hicks or Ellsbury, who's actually playing pretty decently, and then now with Bird coming up and, you know, Castro back and Holiday approaching coming back, there's just too many bodies at this point. So I think they have to just really make sure that he is healthy, and I think this is just another good excuse to make sure that he is healthy.
We talked a couple weeks ago about how the Yankees were getting reinforcements with Starlin Castro and Greg Bird, and that's great. And Matt Holliday is also supposedly going to be making rehab stint in Scranton and could be back as soon as next week. That's all well and good, but when you have this many players that you're going to be relying on coming back from injury, like Starlin Castro doesn't look that great at the plate so far. Aaron Hicks, after he had a few hot games when he first returned, has gone back to struggling. I don't understand what he's doing at the plate. He doesn't seem to have an approach. He's either trying to hit the ball to the moon or he's trying to like just walk. So I have not liked what I've seen from Aaron Hicks the last week or so. So you've got a lot of guys trying to find their swing again as we're going into the most important series of the season, four games against Boston.
Yeah, not what you want. Not what you want when you're going into that type of series. There's no doubt they put themselves in a position where they can really make up some ground or catch them if they were to actually play well against the Indians. Boston making a comeback out of and winning the game against Toronto and then shutting them down. So look, the bottom line is that you need this team to be on full stride. And you're right, it's tough to do that when you're coming back from injuries. I mean, for all intents and purposes, you got Greg Bird and Starlin Castro on spring training right now. They're just trying to figure out what they're doing, how they're doing it, get that swing back, get that feel back. And right now, unfortunately, there's just no time for that. There's no time to wait. They have to actually come back and produce at a high level. Makes me worried about Matt Holliday too, because we saw what he tried to, he was a shell of himself when he came back. And I'm very curious to see what he is now.
And he didn't even look good in Tampa when he was making rehab.
Yeah, I mean, they sent him up to Scranton for a reason, right? So I don't know if it's just going to be, you know, maybe they take their time with him at Scranton as well, and they're waiting for the rosters to expand or whatever they're doing. I don't know. I'm sure they're going to take their time, but at the same time, they want him to be playing at a higher level so that they can see, you know, how he is facing AAA at least. So it's an interesting situation they got with Holiday right now. It really is. But, you know, with the way that the roster is, there's really no huge rush to get him back.
Going back to Judge for a second, it was an interesting situation today in the game when Girardi, it was the last out of the game against Cody Allen, one of the best relief pitchers in baseball, down 2-1, Aaron Judge pinch hits for Ronald Torres. On paper, that obviously makes sense. You're trying to tie the game with a home run. But I don't know if setting up Aaron Judge after you just sat him down for a couple days to try and get his swing right, the fact that he also may be dealing with an injury, putting him up there against Cody Allen, that doesn't really bode well for his confidence. And then he's batting cleanup in game two. I just kind of think Girardi's in the middle here with Aaron Judge.
Well, it's an interesting move too, because when you look at Torres and the type of numbers he has in big situations, I mean, the dude's on base. I get that you're trying to get the long ball and you're trying to get one swing to tie the game. But at the same time, Torres gives you an opportunity to get a base runner on and then you have, you know, the tying run on base. And giving the rest of the team the chance to drive him in. So I don't know. It's a very weird situation to put a man in who you're sitting down because of struggling, because of a potential injury, and then going up against one of the better closers. It's a head scratcher, man. And It's just like, add it to the list of the amount of things that Girardi is doing this year, not bullpen related even, but roster related. And I don't think we really complain too much about what he did roster related. He would make some weird things about sitting a guy when they're hot occasionally, but the majority of our complaints I felt like came with the bullpen. I don't know. He's doing some very strange things at this point. And like I've said in the past, man, he's really, this is the first time I've ever really questioned Girardi and the way he's doing things.
Wednesday afternoon was their 23rd one-run loss of the season. That leads baseball.
That's bad.
That's horrible. Like, even if you just take
a third.
Yeah. Just take a third of those games and flip it. I mean, those, you figure one-run games are either-or games. Even if there's six or seven of those that bounce the Yankees' way, maybe they're obviously, they could be in first place at this point. But at a certain point, you have to look at the manager and say, what are you not doing in these one-run games? Now, in the ninth inning with this pinch hitting situation, I don't want to say that Girardi's the reason they lost the game, because that's asinine. The fact that the whole offense was shut down by Trevor Bauer again, which is a whole other issue. But he pinch hits Starlin Castro for Todd Frazier, and then he pinch hits Aaron Judge for Ronald Torres. Why not let Todd Frazier hit? He's also a guy who can go deep. And then pinch hit Starlin Castro for Ronald Torres, who's going to have to go in the game to play second base even if you do tie the game.
Yeah, there's weird situations like that. Again, he's looking at the binder, looking at previous numbers most likely, and saying that this is my matchup. This is what I think will work. This is what the numbers say. And then he just does it. There's no feel for the game. There's no intuition. There's none of that, because he just goes by strictly the numbers, strictly the right move in the book. And that to me is why he's making a lot. And honestly, if you're talking about one-run games, if you think about a one-run game, a lot of that, to me, it's coming down to feel for the game. Do you have the tempo of the game at that moment? Do you understand where your players are at that moment in the game? And I think the overwhelming answer, when you see how many one-run losses this team has, is that Girardi doesn't get it. He doesn't have the tempo, the pulse, the vibe of the team, the vibe of the situation, and he's making the wrong call more times than not. I mean, you can talk about how many times he's put Chapman back to back to back in big situations for him just to fail once again. So, I don't know. This is just leading me down the same road of Girardi is really, really doing things to unimpress me this year.
Right. Well, it's tough, though, because at a certain point, you can't blame Girardi for the fact that they went 1-for-7 and left 8 guys on base again in game one. Like, Girardi's not out there trying to get that run home from third base.
No, 100%. But you have too many. Yeah, exactly.
Too many. Where there's smoke, there's fire. With the 23 one-run losses, eventually you have to say, okay, yeah, players, it's on you, but you have to look at the manager too. At the very least, just to put blame somewhere.
Well, I mean, you guys need to be put in situations where they can succeed, not in situations where they're doomed almost before they even approach the plate or approach the mound. And a manager can absolutely hold a guy back and not put him in a position where chances are, because of what's been happening lately and the way he's throwing or the way he's hitting, that it's not going to end well for that guy in that particular situation. But I'm going to do it anyway because it's the eighth inning or it's the ninth inning and this guy pitches in that time or, you know, whatever the case may be, and it's in the book and that's what is always done. So I'm going to do it. There's a feel for the game that is extremely lacking right now, and I have a problem with that. It goes back to my eye test. It goes back to me not really looking at all the metrics as much. I mean, yes, they're important. You have to take them into consideration. I get that. But a manager has to have a feel for his players, has to have a feel for his situation and the flow of the entire game. So, and Girardi is doing a terrible job of that this year.
Well, how much do you put on the fact that we've got a bunch of young players playing in their first ever meaningful baseball games?
I don't. I mean, does that really put – is Aroldis Chapman a young player? Is Aroldis Chapman that guy who's coming in a big situation again and again and again after struggling? No.
No.
No, that's the Girardi factor. That's what that is. It has nothing to do with the young player. There's a lot of guys that can handle it. Clint Frazier, I feel totally confident in a big moment. You know why? Because I look at him and I see the way he acts. I see the way that he approaches big moments. And to me, it looks like he embraces them. There are other players that do not feel that way.
Clint Frazier's not on the field right now.
I'm just giving you an example of a type of situation with a young guy.
Yeah, you've got Aaron Judge, who's going through the biggest struggles of his life. He's never gone through something like this. And then you've got Gary Sanchez, who let's talk about Sanchez now and is two more pass balls in this series. That's something that needs to be addressed, because we've talked about it all season and people are kind of poo-pooing it, like, well, he's still a great player. Yeah, we're not saying he's a bad player, but it's two more pass balls in this series alone that have directly led to runs. It was a guy on third base in both situations and he could not block the ball. The one on Monday night, I guess, was only half his fault, because Adam Warren spiked a fastball, and it's hard to block a ball when it's a fastball. You don't expect a fastball to be spiked across the plate like that. But the one today in the first inning was almost a strike, and he just completely whiffed on it.
You know, there are so many people defending him as a baseball player and completely just dismissing what happens on the defensive side. One in particular, Ryan Rucco's tweet that I think you went in there and kind of responded to him as well a little bit. It rubbed me the wrong way, because it was almost like everybody is stupid for looking at Gary Sanchez as a complete player and because of the defense criticizing him. So we should just forget about everything because he's a great offensive player, which he is, which we acknowledge. But half of the game, when you are such an important part of the team as your battery, as the guy that's controlling your pitching staff, calling the game for you, catching the ball when someone's throwing 100 miles an hour in crucial times, when that guy is doing a terrible job on that side, he has to be called out. He has to, that the attention has to go to that side of the ball, because it's costing the Yankees ball games at this point. And this is the time where you cannot be costing ball games for dumb mental mistakes, for lackadaisical defensive errors. There's just no room for that. I don't care if you're a rookie or if you're in your second year of ball. It doesn't matter. I don't care if you hit 60 home runs. And if you let up three runs because of your past balls, then I got to tell you about that. And I got to look for improvement. I don't know what it is, why people think that everything is just gone and dismissive because he's a great offensive player. Well, then you know what? Maybe he should be the DH.
Well, he's not just a great offensive player. He's also a great throwing catcher. And if you look at advanced metrics, I was actually surprised about this. He's above average framing wise. I did not think he was above average framing, but he's the worst in baseball as far as blocking balls. 13 pass balls on the season. A lot of them have led directly to runs and runners getting on base in big situations. He's now tied for the most pass balls in Yankees history with 13 with Posada, except Posada had it in 400 more innings than Gary Sanchez.
That's crazy.
So the issue of pass balls is, you can't just dismiss it like you said. It's a gigantic issue and it's glaring.
And does that not speak to also the 23 games that the Yankees have lost with a one-run deficit? I mean, that's you look at a ball that gets by a guy and there's a runner on third base. There's your run. I know that's happened before. I know that those runs have counted and the games have been lost because of those runs. So aren't you looking also at the fact that this guy is there at the end of a game and being your, I was talking about this a couple weeks ago, I think, about being your closer at catcher and having Romine go in the ninth inning because there's no confidence, or Chapman not being able to drop a slider or a breaking ball, you know, low in the zone, potentially in the dirt, and having the confidence that Sanchez is going to block that ball and keep that runner at third. That's a big thing, because if that's not happening, then they don't have the confidence in the catcher. Then they have to throw a pitch they don't feel confident in. And that's another problem. And guess what? Advanced metrics don't pick that up, but that's a thing.
Yeah, totally. And I guess the good news is the fact that blocking balls, as far as catchers go, is like the easiest thing to improve on, it, I think, anyway. If you don't have the arm strength, you don't have the arm strength. You can't really teach arm strength. And framing, I guess that's sort of like a feel for the game type of thing. Blocking is just getting your ass and working, like getting your ass down on the ground and working at it.
Well, no,
he could do that.
Yeah, but the thing is there's also a very big feel in that as well. I mean, there is a huge feel in blocking a ball. The ball is spinning in a different direction at a different speed every single time it's thrown, depending on who it's thrown, lefty, righty, if this guy's throwing hard, curveball, slider, it doesn't matter. The ball is spinning in different ways. So one, there's a huge mental approach to the blocking the ball. And two, you got to know what's coming and you got to anticipate the bounce. And this dude is literally anticipating the wrong way. It's crazy. He's a major league catcher and he's anticipating the wrong spin on a guy that he's caught how many bullpens for? It baffles my brain.
I can't remember who tweeted this, so I apologize for not giving them credit today, but they were saying that, okay, so Sanchez is calling pitches and he knows where they're going and he can't block them. What makes us think if he goes to first base, he could block balls at first base where he doesn't know where it's going?
Valid point. I don't know. There's nothing telling you that he could do that. That's why maybe, and just maybe, he's going to be the long-term designated hitter. And I personally think that's where he's going to be eventually. Because if this blocking thing doesn't get fixed, and honestly, like, he's going to have to do a ridiculous amount of work. And it's not going to happen in season. It's going to have to be an off-season thing where he just is working at it every single day. If it doesn't get better in the near future, in the next couple of years, he's going to be the designated hitter. There's no way that you can sustain a guy behind the plate losing games with balls just flying by him. You just can't do it.
Is he better than what Mike Piazza was defensively?
Oh, I don't know. Mike, that's unfair. It's too young. Mike Piazza played an entire career and was terrible forever. The entire time he was
bad, and he had a shitty arm. Oh, terrible arm. I just can't remember how he was as far as like framing pitches and working with pitchers. Clearly he was pretty good, or else I don't think he would have been a catcher his entire time. They would have moved him to first base eventually, or he would have signed with an AL team and just DH'd.
Yeah, I don't remember the mechanics of him behind the plate. I remember his arm was bad and that he was in the National League the entire time. So that was something that people just said, hey, the guy can produce at the plate and they're going to forgive or dismiss or whatever it is about the arm. They said it was good enough. And they said that they will ride with the defensive liability for the offense. And I'm just not good with that. I don't like that mindset.
Monday's game, it was Severino versus Kluber, two of the best AL pitchers, premier pitching matchup. Severino coming in had a 3.14 ERA, Kluber 2.63. He's now the AL ERA leader, so maybe some people are saying he's taken over the Cy Young favorite over Chris Sale. It was everything as it was built up to be as we were like going into the sixth inning in that game. Severino gave only three hits in that game, and they were all home runs. Ended up giving the three earned runs. One of them was an unearned run that eventually allowed to score after he came out of the game. Can we say Severino pitched good if he gave up three home runs?
Yeah, because to me, when they're solo shots, you're minimizing damage. You're pitching to a guy, trying to get him out, being aggressive. I'm okay with that. Solo home runs never bothered me. Especially if there's three solo home runs, then that's kind of fluky and it's a little weird. And that's very much what I think. That's why Tanaka has had success in the past. I mean, he goes more aggressively and he will give up the occasional solo shot. This year's a different story, but in the past, that's kind of what you saw. And I was fine with it. I know a lot of people were good with it. So I'm fine with solo home runs, in all honesty. I think you have a different approach when there's nobody on base.
Definitely. And he only gave up those three hits. So he was dominating the game in that sense. He just made three mistakes, two of them to Jose Ramirez, one of them to Carlos Santana. You could tell, though, the Yankees were not going to scratch much off Corey Kluber. They got two runs. They actually had a lead. Todd Frazier gave him a lead with a two-out RBI hit. You'd think with Severino on the mound in a one-run lead, you're pretty confident in that situation. It didn't work out. Yankees went down quietly into the night in the last few innings of that game. They have a day off. The Tuesday rainout kind of screws them because a doubleheader on Wednesday into four games against Boston. Jaime Garcia is on the mound, gives up the couple of runs early. Pitches pretty good, though. Five innings, six hits, two runs. One of them was unearned because of the Sanchez thing. And then Chad Green comes in and is just dominant. Seven strikeouts. He got eight outs and seven strikeouts.
Yeah, I mean, we can't say enough about what Chad Green has been to this bullpen and the length he's provided out of the bullpen too. I mean, the guy could come in, throw one inning, and for the majority of the time, he had a hiccup at Fenway and gave up a couple of runs. Or it was, I think the runners were just on, and they were inherited runs that he had given up at the game that I was at on that Friday night. But he was dominant that first inning. And then all year long, he's just been a revelation out of the bullpen. The guy's really found a home and really found his groove coming out of that pen. I mean, he's a high strikeout guy. He's a swing and miss guy. He throws hard and he seems like a real just lean back and rock and fired in there type guy. He doesn't stress a lot. It doesn't look like much bothers him either.
The offense though, just couldn't get it done. And there's a stat that came out and I updated it after Wednesday's game. The Yankees have now allowed the first run to score in the game in 22 of their last 31 games. And with the offense the way it's going, you put yourself in an early hole like that. They get behind the eight ball and then they just suck for the rest of the night.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. They do. They it's like they press They swing at balls that they're not supposed to, that they wouldn't normally, and they're trying to just scratch across because they know they have to come back. It's not what you want. It's not ideal. It pisses me off how many times that is so relevant to say that, but it is not what you want. And you know, the fact is that they're just not getting out. It's been a tough stretch offensively with a few small areas. I feel like they've been the valleys rather than the peaks, though, of the offense coming out in the second half. I'm really hoping that when everybody is healthy and actually back in a groove and clicking, that they still have, you know, 2 to 3 weeks left of baseball that they can go on a nice run.
Are we still holding out hope that that's going to happen?
Yeah, I think
We haven't seen that since early June.
Right.
They have not all been clicking since early June.
And what was the common denominator? Everybody was healthy at that point. They were all there. They were that team that we saw is slowly getting back. They're almost there. You add two more pieces two more pieces, even with Frazier coming back, but Holiday back, and then expanded rosters to kind of add some extra bullets. You're having everybody at that point healthy and, you know, had some at-bats underneath them since they've come back. So I still feel like it's setting up for a hot September. That's just kind of how I'm reading the situation. And I'm really hoping for it. Maybe it's just me being more positive than anything, but, you know, that's what it looks like.
Last episode, we said, this is great. Now the Yankees are 2.5 back. They don't have to sweep the Red Sox. Are we back on the fact that they have to sweep the Red Sox this weekend?
Well, I was really not on the thing that they need to sweep the Red Sox. I think they could still split no matter what. I mean, even if they... I still think they can split no matter what.
I don't think they can split. They at the very least
there's
need
too
to
much.
Three
there's too much baseball. There's still a month left of baseball a million things can happen. So
this is your last chance. This is your last chance
at
going
them directly.
Heads up with them.
I get that. But I also think that I still think they're due for a decent losing streak. I don't think they're not good enough to stay hot through September. I just don't see that happening. And I think the Yankees can. I think the Yankees are a better team once fully reloaded, and I think they can have a better September. And even if they're not head to head, you know, whether they take 3-1 or they go 2-2, I think they can come and I still think they can take that division. But they got to take care of everybody else. They got to start winning series that are not against the Red Sox, because I think the Red Sox will lose series coming up.
I think it's a win for the Red Sox if they split. The Yankees have their four best pitchers going: Severino, Tanaka, Sabathia, and Sonny Gray. It's exactly how they wanted to line it up. It lined up for them in this four-game series. It's interesting because I actually, coming up when I talked to Rich Keefe, he talked about the Red Sox' biggest weakness going into September. I did not expect him to say what he said, so stay tuned for that. If you guys are going to the stadium this weekend, definitely go grab a Bronx Banner Ale. You saw us drinking it. Scott and I were drinking it on the Facebook Live last week. They're also sponsoring our September 30th event. It's a great summer beer, perfect for baseball as we're wrapping up summer. It's light, it's easy, it's refreshing. If you're there, it's in over 6 sections at Yankee Stadium. You can also check them out in a bunch of bars around the stadium and in their South Bronx-based tasting room.
The other thing about Bronx Brewery is that they are a charitable organization. They give back to New York. The beer is, every single time you purchase a Bronx Banner Ale, 5% of the case sold is donated to the New York Restoration Project, which is a local nonprofit focused on making the South Bronx greener and more sustainable. Can't think of a better way to support the community. Drink some good beer, support the community, make the South Bronx green again.
And if you want to find out where the beer is sold, go to thebronxbrewery.com/find, select the Bronx Banner in the dropdown, enter your zip code. You can also check out all their other beers. I know their pale ale and their IPA is delicious as well. So check them out, thebronxbrewery.com/find. Coming up, I talked to Rich Keith. Stay tuned for that, and we will talk to you guys in a few days. Shout out to all the fake fans, to the dreamers that can make plans. Joining me on the podcast now is Rich Keefe from WEEI. You can find him on Twitter at Keefe21. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Pretty good. This series coming up, I know we're a few days away from it, but a four-game series, I think this is the biggest Red Sox-Yankees series in like 5 years, just with all the stuff, all the weight of it with playoff implications.
Yeah, you know what? This whole year, we've actually been starting to talk about how good the rivalry, you know, was and could be again, because like you said, for a few years there, it kind of died off. I don't think it'll ever, ever get to the point where it was in 03 and 04. But that's saying something. I mean, that is the greatest rivalry of all time and at the height of its power. But all of a sudden this year, meaningful games. I mean, it makes sense. You got both teams at the top of the standing. They both have really good players, exciting guys to watch on both sides. And the difference between winning the division and playing in that one game play-in is huge. So now all of a sudden you're talking about big, meaningful series between the two teams, which is great.
Yeah, that's a good point. That, like, back in 03-04 when they played late in the season, even though it was heated and everyone wanted to kick each other's ass, at least the team could fall back and say, well, we're still going to be in the division series, no big deal.
Right, yeah, exactly. They knew that. They had that assurance. And I think what really helped is if these two teams could face off in the division series this year. I mean,
needs
that would
to
launch it back into... Yeah. You don't think it will? Or you think it needs to? Oh, it needs to. Yeah, no, it absolutely needs to. Yeah. And it could. I mean, it could line up that way. You know, we'll see what happens. The Red Sox, for a little while, looked like they could maybe catch the Astros, the number one seed. I don't know if that'll happen, but if they could, obviously the ALCS would be unbelievable. But even the DS, just to get a series, a back and forth, get the hatred going again would be tremendous.
A loser goes home match. That's what we need between these two teams.
Yes, 100%. Let's see it.
So from a rivalry perspective, I think, like you were saying, it's been better this season and then season past. Are you hating any of these young Yankees like Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge? From a Red Sox fan perspective, do you hate these guys yet? Because I'm hating some of these Red Sox players, finally.
Well, no, that's good to hear. I don't think I was. I'll tell you what, it wasn't obviously in a series against the Red Sox, but seeing what Gary Sanchez did in that brawl against the Tigers, some of the cheap shots he was taking, I feel like he could be easily hateable. Aaron Judge, not hateable. I mean, the only reason he's hateable maybe here is because he's on the Yankees, but he'd be somebody that everybody would really enjoy watching on a nightly basis. I don't think it's fair yet. At least, you know, the impression that I get from callers that we talk to on a daily basis, right now it's still that they're hating, you know, the pinstripes, and they're hating the name on the front of the jersey, not yet on the back. But thankfully, they do have young stars, so it's really only a matter of time until those guys become, you know, the next villain.
What did you think of Pedro's comments about Gary Sanchez? And if you haven't heard them, let me know.
What did he say?
Well, he was like that. This is going to follow him around. What he was doing, cheap-shotting Miguel Cabrera.
I agree with that. I think it's true, and I think obviously Pedro, as a former player, would certainly know. I think any series against Detroit is obviously he is going to be highlighted. He's going to be a guy that they go after. That's not going away for a long time. But I also just think how players see that, it might not be, you know, every series that they face, and maybe it's not quite as big of a deal as Pedro makes it out to be. But you know, everybody saw that. You know, that was on the highlights. Every player is aware of that. They're going to know where he is in those situations. And we know how some pitchers like to take matters into their own hands, and they might feel justified in you know, going at Sanchez. Sure.
But you don't think it's a little hypocritical considering what he did to Don Zimmer?
Well, Don Zimmer rushed him. Don Zimmer, like an idiot, comes flying out of the dugout and tries to attack Pedro. I thought Pedro... And Pedro's actually apologized for that, which I never thought he should. I was like, that old guy was running after you. You just did whatever you could. You kind of Olayed him out of the way, which I thought was maybe the best defensive move he could have done. But that to me, I feel like, is much different.
Yeah, I think Don Zimmer has even had talked about that afterwards, and he said it's one of the most regretful things he's ever done. And then he almost blacked out, and he didn't even know what he was going to do when he got there. He just knew he hated Pedro. He was pissed off at the guy and started running at him.
Right. No, I mean, it was an amazing moment, but you're right. I think both guys afterwards felt like, what are we doing here? Like, this is a great rivalry. This is, ends up being a great moment, but I think, in a weird way, both were very embarrassed by what they did.
Yeah, Zimmer forgot for a second that he wasn't 35 years old anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta love the passion. You gotta love the heart, but yeah, it just... He didn't have the body behind it.
Yeah, that's those old school guys. That's what the sport was missing for a while.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. And you get flashes of it now. You know, and that was one of the things. As much as you know, David Ortiz can do no wrong around here, that was one thing that annoyed some Red Sox fans. Would be him, you know, hanging out with Robinson Cano, you know, like the night before the game, or talking on first base with Giambi or whoever it was. Because at that moment, you're like, oh man, maybe we as fans care more about it not necessarily the performance, but just more about how much you hate the other team than the players do. But every once in a while, you do get a flash of, all right, these teams, you know, they don't get along.
That's a great point, because I remember even when Cano was in the All-Star game, he would always be hanging around David Ortiz, using him as a mentor. And then as soon as Cano left the Yankees, he grew an identical beard to David Ortiz. And, like, I thought they looked like cousins at that point, that you couldn't even tell them apart.
Yeah, no, that was great. And that was always a guy, you know, Ortiz would be on second base or, you know, a pitcher's meeting, and they're, like, bro hugging on second. Yeah. Like, oh, come on. Like, save it for, you know, when there's no cameras around. It kind of took a little something out of it.
Right, you got bro hugs at second base, the wave going around the stadium. It's just not what it used to be.
No, it's not. No, we're getting old. Like, in our day, the rivalry was so much better.
Speaking of on the field, or actually off the field, Dustin Pedroia, he was kind of going to step in as the Red Sox leader once Ortiz left, but his absence, like, what's his status, and is his injury been a huge loss for the Red Sox this year?
Yeah, he's actually been doing really well. You know, he was leading the team in batting average and on-base percentage when he went down. He's been dealing with a knee injury all season long, and it sounds like it might be something that he's always going to be dealing with. You know, he's in his, you know, close to his mid-30s now, so this may not be something he ever fully recovers from. But he could play this in this weekend series against the Yankees. I think that's the plan. I think he was out there working out today, hopefully being able to come off the DL. And it would be nice. I think he's only been in the lineup maybe once with Eduardo Nunez after they acquired him right around the deadline. So it would be nice to see Nunez and Devers and Pedroia all in the same lineup for once. That would be those would be three of their best nine that they could trot out there. So hopefully this weekend, you know, Red Sox fans get a chance to see him.
It seems like he's had some injury problems the last couple of years, and I was actually, just before we started recording, looking at his contract, and I was, like, kind of shocked to see he's signed through 2021. Like, I don't see him making it through the end of that contract.
No, I know. And when he signed that deal, I remember being pretty blown away. Like, he's obviously a great player. I mean, he's a league MVP, for God's sakes. I know that might have been a down year, but he won the MVP. And just when I've been ready to sort of count him out and say, all right, he's completely done, like, he's cooked, they're going to have to move on from him, you know, he has a year like this, or at least a start to the year like this, or even more than start, you know, a good half of the year where he's hitting over 300 and he's playing. He's always played well defensively, and then he's hit again this year. And so you say, all right, well, maybe he can, you know, extend this out. He signed for a zillion years, and you're right, he probably won't finish that out. I wouldn't be shocked if he plays another year or two. You know, and maybe eventually you move him down lower in the lineup. Like, he's always hitting the top third of the lineup throughout the entire season. So he's surprised me a bit this year.
Yeah, he plays kind of similarly to Brett Gardner, just balls to the wall. So, like, he's going to deal with injuries. Gardner will go down or just have nagging injuries, and it sucks all of the life out of his bat. And you're like, well, why does Gardner stink now? Oh, it's because he's dealing with a shoulder injury. Kind of similar things to Pedroia, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, oh, yeah, because he's out there. I mean, it looks like Pedroia is swinging out of his shoes every time he's up there. Yeah. And it's one of those things, when he was a rookie, you're like, this guy's not going to work. And then he wins Rookie of the Year. The next year he's winning the MVP. And you're like, all right, never mind. Turns out he's a very good player. But, yeah, the way he runs the bases, the way he's diving in the field, like, you got to take some of these injuries. And I do wonder, because they got Nunez, who's not great in the field, but he can obviously play second base, I wouldn't be surprised if they take some of it away from him and say, hey, you're going to DH a bunch of games and at least get your bat in the lineup with less chance of you getting hurt.
How many times would you say Nunez's helmet has fallen off since he's been a Red Sox?
Yeah, I don't think it fits. I don't know what the deal is. Although the Red Sox have a long line of great players, see Manny Ramirez and up and down, but Hanley Ramirez, those guys just don't love having their helmets on. So I guess if it works for them, then, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, well, it didn't make sense with those guys because they weren't running very fast. At least Nunez is running fast while they were doing it.
That's true. Those guys are just more off like a swing or, you know, a quick step to first base. Yeah, at least Nunez is flying around the bases.
So what's going on with David Price? I feel like this is the David Price saga in Boston has been a shit show.
Oh, my God. It absolutely has been. And what happened to him, and most fans, I think anyway, dislike him. Like, they can't stand David Price. They signed him to this crazy contract, as everybody knows. It's the richest contract in Red Sox team history. and he gets a brutal start to the season last year. So he was behind the eight ball. His ERA was, you know, the sixes and all this stuff. Everyone was saying he's a bust. That was early on. He ended up pitching a little bit better later in the year, but then he ends it in the playoffs against the Indians with a terrible start. And that was always the concern with Price, was that he sucks in the postseason. And so he's had one chance here in Boston, and he was bad. Then he starts the year on the DL this year. He comes back. He's pretty good. Not great. You know, not David Price, you know, with Tampa or Detroit good, but he was fine. Then the whole incident with Dennis Eckersley, which I'm sure you've discussed, and it was just ridiculous. He's so sensitive, and it just doesn't fit well here in Boston at all. But apparently he was going to be pitching from the mound today or tonight. I'm not sure what the deal was. So maybe by tomorrow we'll have a clearer timetable on whether or not he's going to be back. But, yeah, what he's going to have to do is he's going to have to pitch well in the playoffs. And I don't know if that's going to be this year or next year or ever, but that's the only way he could get back in the good grace of a Red Sox fan.
But he's never done that before. And obviously he can. He's capable of it. He's a good pitcher. But like you said, he's so sensitive. And Boston, New York, these kinds of markets they're not kind to sensitive players.
No, not at all. And, you know, yeah, it's been a real struggle. And I feel like that sometimes gets overblown when they're like, oh, like, how's this player going to handle Boston, or how they're going to handle, you know, New York or Philly? And I'm like, well, if they're a good player, they'll be fine. But when they're so worried about what people say about them on Twitter, or what a reporter is going to say about them in an article, or all of a sudden, if you care that much, then, man, maybe this isn't the place for you. And you look at the places that he's played before, you know, Tampa Bay, nobody cares. Detroit and Toronto, I would say they care, but it's not as obsessive as it is, you know, here or you know, with the Yankees. Like, it's a lot different. So
he also pitched in Detroit with Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. Like, he was not the number one pitcher there.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. Like, he didn't have to take on that whole responsibility. And but then, you know, in the playoffs, it would just swallow him up. And he wouldn't be the same guy. He's pitching out of the bullpen and all this other nonsense. So yeah, he is struggled. And to be honest, a lot of us here are hoping he has an opt-out after next year. And, you know, the hope is that he'll say, you know what, I know I'm making a lot of money, but maybe I can make money somewhere else and just be more happy. And the hope is, it's crazy. You know, they signed him a year ago, you're like, here you go, they got their ace, and now people want him gone. They're like, yeah, he's not working.
Well, isn't his contract set up so he makes like $30 million a year if he doesn't opt out? I don't know if you're going to walk away from that if you're David Price. I mean, $30 million a year is ridiculous.
No, it is absolutely ridiculous. But my hope is that he gets maybe an extra year from somebody, and maybe it's not $30 million, but maybe it's $25 million. Like, I mean, you know how the contracts are going up and up, and they're you know, bad pitchers or mediocre pitchers are making a ton of money. So maybe a team, you know, some team in the National League would be willing to sign him to a contract and just take him off the Red Sox fan.
Right, maybe the Dodgers will save your ass again.
They could. I mean, they've done it once before. Maybe they would do it again. And you wonder, too, like, if he gives up, for a guy who's going to make $300-400 million in his career, could he sacrifice 25 just to be a little bit happier? Like, you would hope some guys would weigh that into their decision.
Yeah, it's interesting because he came to Boston and he was so, like, he seemed like he was, like, embracing it. And I know he had, like, he's very active on Twitter, which I appreciate when players are active on Twitter. But it immediately backfired with him. And as soon as he started to struggle, he just couldn't handle that. That's why I almost feel like if you're a player, it's you either you're not sensitive on social media, or you just don't have social media at all, because it's just backfiring.
Yeah, Chris Sale's not on Twitter or any of that stuff, I don't believe. And when he came in, you're wondering, all right, here's another guy, great pitcher somewhere else. Like, how is he going to be here? And that was one thing that we noticed right away. You're like, I don't think he cares what anybody says about him. He's not searching his name on Twitter. And if he is, he's not letting anybody know about it. Mm-hmm. And so he seems like a guy that just wants to pitch, and he has been amazing this year. And you're right, it's just not to say to any player, hey, you guys shouldn't be on there. But if you know that it's going to affect you, like you were saying, if it's going to bother you that much, well, then maybe take a break. I mean, I think you can, you know, when you retire in 10 years or whatever, you can do all the social media that you want. You can get sensitive. You can tweet back to people. But if it's going to start to affect how you play on the field, you need to deal with it.
I want to talk about Andrew Benintendi, and he's one of the guys that I've really started to hate. Just he's been killing the Yankees, and something about his face annoys me. But he was leading the Rookie of the Year, or he was the Rookie of the Year favorite going into the season. Then Aaron Judge happened in the first half. But it's interesting because Benintendi struggled to start, and then he sat down for a few days, and he's had a really good season since then. And right now, a similar thing is going on with Aaron Judge, where Girardi sat him down because he's been really terrible since the All-Star break, trying to get him turned around. So, like, what has Benintendi's season been like?
Yeah, Benintendi's season has been like you said, he started out fine. You know, he wasn't great, and maybe he still would have been at the top of the Rookie of the Year discussion if it wasn't for Judge, you know, hitting for the triple crown there in the first half of the year. But Benintendi's been pretty good. He's been hitting kind of all over in the lineup. You know, they put a lot of trust in him early in the season. He was hitting pretty high up, and then they would have to move him down. Now he's back to hitting high up again in the lineup, and now with Jackie Bradley Jr. being hurt, not only is he, hitting high in the lineup, but he's playing center field. They moved him over. They basically have three center fielders in their starting outfield with Mookie Betts, Bradley, and Benintendi. But Betts has been so good at getting used to right field that they decided to leave him there. So they're putting a little bit more on Benintendi, allowing him to play center. And you're right. I think it was three straight games that he sat down for, and I remember thinking it was too much. I'm like, let him play out of it. Like, I don't like this, him sitting down. But it ended up being the right move because since he's come back, he was one of the hottest hitters in baseball for like a few weeks in a row there. So he's been good. I mean, last year when he got called up, you could see sort of what he was capable of. And that's why I think expectations were so high for him at the beginning of the year. But now he's a part of a young outfield that, people love here. Like you're talking about, you know, people hate David Price. The fan favorites, though, in addition to Sale, are probably the young guys in that outfield.
You mentioned Farrell sitting him down, so that was one of the moves he made that actually paid off. I know he's not really liked in Boston. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it is. It's still the case. Even they've been in first place, I mean, almost the entire season, and he'll still get calls. You know, if he does something with the bullpen that they disagree with or whatever else, you'll still get the fire Farrell calls. Like, you really do. It's pretty amazing. He's never been that like. The guy wins the World Series in his first year. Now, they did have a couple of last-place finishes, which I think have really, without question, soured people on it. They make the playoffs last year, but then they get swept out by the Indians. So now this is year five for John Farrell. Two playoff appearances, two terrible loss seasons, and now you're sort of seeing, all right, what did he do? But yeah, people don't like him. People are not a fan of John Farrell, and I think that'll get magnified depending on what happens in this upcoming series against the Yankees. You know, people are going to be looking for reasons to get rid of him. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so we've got the series, the four-game series, and the Yankees had a rainout tonight. The Red Sox are playing in Toronto. So as it sits, as we're talking, it's 3.5 games. It might be 2.5 or it might be 4.5. But this series for the Yankees, they pretty much need to win the series or even sweep. But what would you say going into September is the Red Sox' biggest weakness?
So one thing that they've been able to overcome it, again, they're in first place, but they don't have power. Like you look at their lineup, they got some guys that, sure, they can hit home runs, but it's not really their thing, and they've been shut out, I think it's 10 times this year, and so my fear is, I don't think it'll necessarily get them in the regular season, but in the playoffs, if there's a game where they're struggling to hit, I don't know if they have that guy that's going to come up, hit a three-run homer, and make up for the offense that day. That's been something that they've been, again, able to avoid too much trouble with that or prolonged losing streaks, but I still think no true power bat is probably the team's biggest weakness.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because you look up and down the lineup and it on paper anyway, it looks like a really strong lineup. And I feel like every time the Yankees play the Red Sox, Hanley Ramirez is hitting doubles and home runs. So he seems like a nice power bat, but I know he's not had a great season.
Yeah, no, last year he was incredible. Last year he was like 30-100, and Mookie Betts was great. They had David Ortiz in it last year. They had power, and it was a deep lineup, which it ultimately didn't matter come playoff time. They all really struggled there. But this year, yeah, it's just been an issue. And Hanley's streaky, so, you know, Hanley could have a good series for him. But you're just looking to see, do they have a 30 or 35 home run guy? It doesn't feel like they do. Maybe one day Benintendi will do that. Maybe Seth will bounce back, or maybe something will happen. But, yeah, they don't have the Aaron Judge, you know, sitting in the middle of that order.
Right. Well, Rich, we definitely appreciate you coming on. And like we were talking at the beginning, hopefully the Yankees and Red Sox can meet in October.
I hope you're right. That'd be great.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.